You'll turn with me to 2 Timothy, 4th chapter. This is probably the book, 2 Timothy, that years ago when I was a young man, this is a little more than a teenager, but no, this is the passage that that really got me hooked on the Bible. When I read it for the first time, it was like, really read it for the first time. It was like it spoke to me and it said, okay, I've got, I got some stuff that I got to take care of in my life. And I want to be able to be like Paul at the end of my life. I'll tell you a story, though, first. If you read the bulletin, I told you about golf. I hadn't played golf in 3 or 4 years. But I think the last time that I played, it was a pretty horrendous round. I mean, I was hitting it this way and this way. And for the first 17 holes, it was just, it wasn't pretty. But I think Miss Terry was there. But that last hole, and even though I had done so terribly up to that point, that last hole, I hit, boom, straight. Just as long as it could possibly go. Next one I hit the green, and par 5 hit the green. And I'm sitting there going, yes! And then the next one, putted it in. I think I parted. I may have birdied it. But I was just so happy, and I had forgot all about those terrible shots that I had made before. Because I finished well. And I hate losing. I hate losing. As a matter of fact, we'll get together and play with her mom and dad and play this stupid game that we play. And it's the boys against the girls. And I just refuse to quit playing until the boys win. Because I don't want to go home as a loser. I want to finish well. And it's the same in our lives. We want to finish well. So the question hangs in the air here. How do you want to be remembered? Now, I know that when we do lose, there's something, these girls are so mean, they will look at us and they'll go like this. I hate it too. I don't want to do it. And of course, we never do that back if we end up winning. I don't want to be remembered as a loser, do you? What do you hope that people will say about you after you're gone? How will people who know you best summarize the 40 or 50, 60, 70 or 80 years of living? There's a grave on an old plantation. And under the name, there was his date of birth and the date of his death. And there was a 5-word statement that summed up his whole life. It said, a man of unquestioned integrity. Nothing more, nothing less. So suppose it's your tombstone. What 5 words would your friends choose? How do you want to be remembered? What will be your legacy? And here's Paul's answer to that. He's writing from a Roman jail with certain knowledge that he'd soon be dead. And he looked back at his journey with Christ. And he looked forward to what would happen after he died. And then he wrote his own epitaph. He said, for I am already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time has come for my departure. I have fought a good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me only, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. There's probably 100 or so detailed biographies in the Bible. other words, a character, and you have some information about their life, their kind of their beginnings and their ends. There's about 100 people that we get their biographies. About 2/3 of those men and women ended poorly. Either they turned to immorality, or they drifted away from the faith, or their life ended in a backslidden condition. The Apostle Paul was not one of those folks. He finished well. So in order to die well, you have to finish well. You say, what do you mean? Finishing well does not happen by accident. There's a man named John Bingham, called the Penguin. He's a runner. If you're into running, you probably have heard of this guy. I haven't. He's both a runner and someone who knows how to motivate others by successfully run marathons. So what's his secret? Well, he said this: as I stand at the starting line, I know that out there, somewhere, there is a finish line. Now, that's a good principle to keep in mind. Out there, there is a finish line for all of us. You start, and then there you finish. Now, most of us probably think that finish line is quite a few years down the road. Maybe 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30. For me personally, I just don't know what to expect. I don't know. The Lord may take me tomorrow. He may make me ancient. I don't know. All I know is my finish line and your finish line is out there somewhere. And it may be sooner for me than I expect. But whether it's sooner or later, it's bound to become, because in Hebrews 9:27, it says, it is appointed unto man once to die. I have an appointment with death. I do not know when. I do not know where. That's just one appointment that I won't miss. And I can't postpone. So as Paul approaches his own death, he draws some conclusions about his life and what would happen next. So based on his words, I would like for us to think about these three questions together this morning. And that first question is found in verse 6. What kind of departure will you have? And he says, for I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. And when Paul says he's being poured out like a drink offering, he is referring to an Old Testament ritual that accompanies some certain of the sacrifices. The law had mandated when a worshiper brought an offering, part of it was consumed upon the altar, and the other part was given to the priest for his own use. And when the offering was consumed by the fire, the worshiper would sometimes pour a drink offering of wine upon the burnt offering, the burnt sacrifice. And all the wine was to be poured out, and none of it was to be given to the priest. And as the wine hit the burning coals, it evaporated, and a very sweet smell rose up from the altar. Now keep in mind that wine was a symbol of joy in the Old Testament. The drink offering was a symbolic way of saying, I gladly give all that I have to the Lord. The sacrifice that I offer is given as a symbol of wholehearted commitment to God. Nothing is held back. All that I have, I gladly give to God. So when they make that offering, when he says, I have poured myself as an offering, a drink offering, he's talking about giving his entire life to him. Now, Paul knew that his death was close at hand. He knew. He'd been in several prisons over the years, but he kind of figured that this was going to be his last one. He was on death row in Rome, and that he would never be set free. So by speaking of his death as a drink offering, he was saying to Timothy, when you hear of my death, don't think that Nero has executed me against my will. He says, I am gladly giving up my life. What he's saying is, if God wanted me to still be alive, Nero had nothing to say about it. But God has everything. He says, my own blood would be like the wine of the drink offering, gladly given to the one who loved me and gave himself for me. It was Paul's way of saying, don't weep for me, Timothy. Know this, when I die, I am going to die smiling. Isn't that the way you want to go? Isn't that the way that you want to depart from this life? That you want to die smiling, knowing that what's behind is behind and what's ahead is great? The only thing left to give was his life, and he gladly was going to give that. Now, the word departure in verse 6 has three word pictures behind it. It refers to a ship hoisting the anchor, raising the sails, and leaving the harbor. It also refers to, you can get a picture of a departure of an army camp. And they're camped there, and all of a sudden they pull up all the tents and the stakes, and they leave the battlefield. It also pictures a man who had been carrying a staggering burden all of his life, and then the call comes, my friend, lay down your burden, it's time to come home. And for Paul, death was like setting sail, breaking camp, and laying down a heavy burden, and finally going home to be with the Lord. Was Paul afraid to die? Not at all. Over his whole life, he writes these two words, no regrets. Since he had no regrets, he viewed death as simply going home with being the Lord. He'd done everything he had been asked to do. So what kind of departure will you have? Will you have regrets? I wish I had done this and done that. Do you have the same kind of confidence about your own death? That day when you draw your final breath, what is your legacy going to be? What are people going to say? More importantly, what is God going to say? Can you face death with the same buoyant faith that Paul did? Can you offer your life as a living sacrifice to the Lord with nothing held back? Those are questions that only you and I can answer on our own. In verse 7, we'll see the next question you're going to ask. What kind of legacy will you leave? What are people going to think? I have been to funerals. Guys, I could not find anybody to say a good word about the person. I mean, let me tell you, that's just the truth. It was struggle to find something good. Yeah, I just ended up preaching Christ crucified, and that's you know, because there was no legacy that was left, nothing lasting. They did not finish well. They didn't even start well. So whenever I read verse 7, where it says, "I have fought the good fight, I've finished the race, and I have kept the faith." So when I read this, I think of Billy Sunday. How many of y'all know who Billy Sunday is? I know some of you do. Yeah. In the first half of the 20th century, he was America's greatest evangelist. He preached face-to-face with over 100 million people. He shook hands personally with a million of them. He walked the sawdust trail to give their heart to Jesus. These people, he'd preach, and these tent revivals and all that, they just walk up and they give their hearts to Jesus. Engraved on his tombstone are the words of 2 Timothy 4:7. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. And this is the legacy that he left behind. So what is he talking about here? There's three things here. The first is that Paul said, is saying that he lived a disciplined life. He lived a disciplined life. He says, I fought the good fight. This continues to talk about the struggle that Paul faced in his life. How many of y'all have had hard life? You think you went through a lot of struggles and a lot of demons and a lot of things, issues in life? I can guarantee you I can find someone who's worse off than you are. We all have these issues. We all have problems. We all face things in life. But listen to what Paul, what Paul describes his own trouble and his distress and his tribulation, his trials. In 2 Corinthians 6, 4 and 5, he described a normal Christian life including these things. But in all things, approving ourselves as ministers of God, in much patience, in afflictions, in necessities, in distresses, in stripes, in imprisonments, in tumults, in labors, in fastings, in watchings. In other passages, he spoke about the spiritual opposition he faced through Satan, the forces of darkness, the indwelling of the power of the flesh and the spiritual darkness of paganism. He also fought himself quite a bit. He says, I do what I know I ought not to do, and I do not what I ought to do. He just fought constantly. His life was a constant battle. He knew about these things. He didn't have an easy life. He never stopped fighting for Jesus until the day he died. Now at last the struggle is almost over. The struggle's almost over. Soon his commander-in-chief will grant him an honorable discharge from the battles of life. And he'll be promoted from church militant to church triumphant. You see, we look at this life as just this life. But there's more to life. We are here for a reason. We are here for the battle. And no, the battle's not going to be easy. But one day, he's going to call us away from the battlefield and says, you've done your part and let's go home. Paul was ready to go home. Matter of fact, Paul says, for me to die is gain. But to live is Christ. He knew what he was talking about. He knew that his days were numbered, he did not know how many, but he knew that it was close. He could have waddled and whined and cried, I don't want to die. He could have done all of that. But no. He says, my time is at hand. I'm ready. He lived a disciplined life. He fought well. And for him, the battle would soon be over. The second thing is he lived a directional life. He says, I have finished my course. Yesterday, I was putting some sod down. We were doing some work on the side yard there, and I was putting the little sod down. We came up a few pieces short. And I said, I can make this work this way. And Terry looked at me and she says, finish it. Just finish. Because I would have finished it later, right? Maybe, maybe not. Complete it. Finish it. And so I did. Don't stop. Don't delay what God wants you to do in your life. Be directional. Know which way you're going and continue going. If you're in a race, don't stop. Just keep running or walking. Just keep on going. Paul says, he says, I finished my course. We cannot think Paul meant I did what I wanted to do. That wasn't his course. He finished God's plan for him. That's not like Frank Sinatra saying, I did it my way. Paul didn't do it his way. I can assure you, my way does not jive with what God's way wants for my life. No, because I'm more into having fun and having a more easier life than God is for me. Paul means that he followed the course that the Lord Jesus set out for him the day he saved him on the road to Damascus. Ever since that day, he had been following the Lord, doing whatever the Lord had done, wanted him to do. Good times, bad times, whether in happy circumstances or in the midst of pain and suffering. Paul walked in the way of the Lord, and now that journey was just about over with. He could look back and say, it wasn't easy. It was often hard. And sometimes I wonder if I was going to make it or not. But now I can see that Jesus led me all the way. He had reached the finish line at last. Professor at a Christian college with his son went on a 1,000-mile backpacking trip from British Columbia to Southern California. They hiked through the mountains of Washington, Oregon, California. Many days they were alone on the trail, often camping above the 10,000-foot level. They faced every sort of discouragement, lack of food, water, danger from wild animals, bears. They faced dangers from bears, dangers from robbers that they might meet, days of rain and mud. They were incredibly exhausted. The very real possibility of injury, personal injury, and not to mention the fact that they were lonely. They had blisters, mosquitoes, the extremes of the heat and the cold. And before they left on the trip, the professor discovered that over 90% of those who had taken that same journey of more than 500 miles would never make it. Only 10% would make it. And after, he said 50% never even get started. And then they said 40% quit after they start. And only 10% would actually finish that journey. And so they studied that 10% that actually finished the journey. And they came to certain conclusions. Some of it involved training and exercising, getting their bodies correct and all that. But they realized that it was the mental part of it that was the biggest issue. Mentally. They knew that their real enemy lay within, not outside. Those who succeeded made two important decisions. First, they decided they would finish the trip no matter what happened. They made a commitment. They said, I'm going to finish this. I don't care what happens. How about, I'm going to serve the Lord. I do not care what happens. Too many decide that they're going to serve the Lord as long as it's convenient. I'm going to serve the Lord as long as it don't get too rough. But you know what? I got options here. If it gets too rough, I'll find another path. And so the people who went on this trip, they decided that they would, no matter what happened, they would continue, finish. And second thing, they expected bad things to happen and decided that when they would not be surprised, and when they did happen, they wouldn't be surprised or dismayed. They did not come in and say, oh, this is going to be fun, we're going to camp, and everything's going to be great. And then bad things happen. They go, what happened? They knew things were going to happen. There was no illusions. It was not going to be easy. So when the rains turned the trail into a quagmire, they didn't quit because they weren't surprised. When the black clouds of mosquitoes, now that might get me to quit. They descended on them like some Old Testament plague. They didn't quit because they weren't surprised. There were nights of loneliness and nights of hunger. They didn't quit because they knew ahead of time that it'd be like this. In essence, the successful backpackers adopted a certain mentality. They knew that the key was simply putting one foot in front of the other. You catch that? Put one foot in front. How do y'all eat an elephant? One bite at a time. How do you get to the finish line? One foot in front of the other, going forward to the finish line. You take a step and you hit the mud. Happens. Brother Gene, you take a step and you see a bear. You take another step and your leg begins to cramp. You take another step and all the crazy people start coming out of the woods. Doesn't matter. You aren't surprised because you knew the crazy people would show up sooner or later. So you just keep putting one foot in front of the other. You know one day the journey will be finished. When I'm driving, I like to do it this way. You've got a long journey ahead, and then I'll set out the number of miles, and I'll say, I am one-tenth of the way there. Anybody else do that? That's the way I do it. I figured, Dan, you probably did that. But one-tenth of the way. And then I go, I am one-third of the way there. And you know what? It helps me get there. You know what? In my life, I am... Oh, I don't even want to go there. How we're at. But I'm closer than I was yesterday. Marking time. Paul's approach to the Christian life was this. No matter what happened to him, he just kept moving forward by the grace of God. One foot in front of the other. One step at a time, one day at a time. He wasn't deterred by opposition because he knew it was coming. Our problem is that we're surprised by trouble. Christian, we think the Christian life ought to be easy, and it's not. We are in a battle, guys. A war. Today is a day of struggle, combat, warfare. Today we march to the battle in the name of the Lord, and the day of rest is coming. It will not be forever. We'll have forever as rest with Him. But in this particular time, we are set aside to face the struggles of this life and the battles. The last thing here. He lived a doctrinal life. He said, I kept the faith. And this simply means he refused to compromise the truth. When other people fell away, Paul preached the word. When the world was against him, Paul paid no attention. When it would have been easy for him to trim his message to save his own life, Paul proclaimed the whole counsel of God. And he didn't back down, he didn't compromise, and he would not preach what people wanted to hear. He just kept the faith. Because Paul knew that nothing can touch him that did not come from the hand of God. He never gave in to discouragement. He truly believed that everything that had happened to him was for his own, for his good, and for God's glory. Therefore, he just kept going on for God to the very end. Even the chains in a Roman jail could not destroy his faith or shatter his confidence in God. He never stopped fighting. He never stopped running. He never stopped believing. And he didn't turn around and go the other direction. So that's pretty tough. Well, let's look at this. What kind of reward will you receive? Is it worth it? Is it worth it for this temporary problems in this life? Look in verse 8. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved His appearing. Here we see Paul's faith shining so brightly in the darkness of the Roman prison that the Roman prison cell seems to disappear. It's not a fact. This is not academic. He believes this. He understands. My life is going, is passing, but I'm going to see Him one day. And when I see Him, all of this will be worth it. He sees past his own beheading. The pain of the moment is now past, and the suffering of this life is now behind him. By faith, he sees a day, that day, when he will receive a reward from the Lord. What will that reward be like? Well, not sure. But it'll be a guaranteed reward, and it's laid up or stored in heaven for Paul. It is a glorious reward. It is the crown of righteousness. It'll be a personal reward. Paul received his reward from the Lord himself, not through mail. It won't be online. He's going to receive it personally from him. In just a few days, weeks, sometime soon, Nero will have Paul beheaded. But in that day, the Lord himself will reverse Nero's earthly judgment. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the universe will weigh in on Paul's case, and his judgment will be final, and it'll be personal. It'll be a future reward. He'll receive his reward on that day, the day Jesus Christ returns from heaven. It'll also be a shared reward. It's not just for Paul, but also for everyone who loves the Lord and longs for his appearing. And that's what's ahead for you and for me if we are children of God and have faithfully finished the course, and we finished well. Be encouraged, child of God. The Lord is not so unjust as to forget about all your struggles. He knows about how hard your fight has been, how you're sometimes tempted to quit, how you're sometimes tempted to fall away and go backwards into the life that you formerly were in, and how you can keep on going when others just throw in the towel and say, "I quit." He sees and he knows, and in that day the Lord himself will reward us if we're faithful to him now, if we'll finish well. He said, "Brother Andy, I didn't start very well. I didn't have all the advantages. I made some mistakes in my life, and maybe I'm too far past it that I can finish well. Maybe it's because of all the bad things that's happened or the life that I've lived before, and maybe I'm struggling. I go back and forth, and I don't think I can finish well." Yes, you can. The word of the Lord is like this. You keep fighting. You keep on running. You keep on believing. And the best of all is yet to come. And it won't be long now. In just a little while, I can't tell you when, and the Lord himself will return, and all of our struggles will be over. And this hot battle that we face today won't last forever. And this long road that we have come and that we may be facing will soon come to an end. And this old world that is full of dangers, toils, and snares won't last much longer. Hold on to your faith. Child of God, hold on to your faith. Stay strong. Keep believing. Put on that armor of God each day, because you're going to need it. Hold on to your faith and never ever give up, because there is a finish line. Just take it one step at a time, one day at a time, and just keep going. Never looking back, but always looking forward to the prize that is ahead, that finish line. And there is a finish line out there somewhere, and it is closer than any of us realize. It does not matter how you start, but it does matter how you finish. I encourage you to finish well. You say, "Well, I can't. I'm not too much past. Too much has gone on. There's no way." That's just not true. That finish line has not changed positions. You just keep plugging away. It's there. Take steps at a time. Be strong in the Lord. Be strong. So, in this journey of life, as a saved child of God, let's finish the race. Let's finish well. Let's finish strong. And by the grace of God, let's finish strong for Jesus. Now, I've talked about finishing and all this. I haven't been talking about salvation. Do you realize that you're not even in the race if you've never asked Jesus Christ into your heart and your life? This is not about receiving salvation. This is about pleasing God. This is about doing what you're supposed to do. If you go into the army, you're in the army. Regardless of what you say, you're in the army. Even if you desert before you go into a battle, well, what's going to happen? Well, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to be dishonorably discharged, if not something worse. You're in God's army. We are in God's army as saved children of God, and He expects us to fight to the last. Until that day, He looks down and says, Randy, it's time. Your battle's over. It's time for someone else to finish the battle. But until that, He expects us to fight, to be strong, and to have faith, and keep putting one foot in front of the other towards the goal of finishing this life well. If you've not accepted Christ as Savior, this is the reason why we're running the race, is to tell you, is to show you how you can receive everlasting life.